friends. I think it was more than 20 years ago that I paid my first visit to Greece, which of course for me meant ancient Greece, classical Greece. And among other places, I visited Delphi. I'd been wanting to visit Delphi for quite a number of years. And at last, my wish, my ambition was fulfilled. And among other sites, I saw the ruins of the great temple of the god Apollo. And as I wandered round, looking at the ruins of that great temple, and saw it on the other sites, I couldn't help recalling, I couldn't help remembering that in ancient days, in the days when the glory that was Greece really was glorious, when the temple stood four square and beautiful and not at all in ruins, I could not help recalling, I could not help remembering that over the portal of the temple of Apollo, there was an inscription that was famous throughout the whole of the classical world, and an inscription that is not unknown even today. The inscription, which was, of course, "Know thyself." Know thyself. The ancient Greeks, of course, had a certain understanding of these words. We perhaps understand these words in another way. Not quite in the ancient Greek way. But in whatsoever way we understand these gnomic words, it's certainly not easy to understand, to know oneself. One could even go so far as to say that when we're young, better to say roughly when we're under 40, we don't usually know ourselves at all. Usually when we're young, especially when we're very young, we are quite blind, we are quite ignorant. And not only do we not know ourselves, we do not even think in those terms. We don't even think in terms of knowing ourselves. Perhaps we don't even, it doesn't even occur to us that there is, so to speak, something there to know which we don't know. So self-knowledge is not something that we prize at that stage, that early stage of our life. It's only quite a bit later on in life that we really start knowing ourselves. And sometimes it's very much later on in life that we start knowing ourselves. We start knowing ourselves, we may say, partly just as the natural result, so to speak, of our ordinary human maturity. And partly we begin knowing ourselves as a result of our increased experience of ordinary life, especially our increased experience of other people, the people with whom we come into contact in all sorts of ways, for all sorts of reasons in the course of our lives. And of course, very often, that experience, including that experience of and with other people, is painful, even very painful indeed. And we may even go so far as to say that very often, it's only through painful experiences that we start to know ourselves. be that as it may, in any case, self-knowledge is something that we achieve to any degree, to any depth, to any extent, comparatively late in life. It's something that we achieve slowly. It doesn't come all at once. It's something that we achieve only with difficulty. And this is true not only of the individual, not only of the individual man and woman. It's also true of what we may term the collectivity. The ancient Greeks as a whole, we may say, the ancient Greeks as a collectivity did not know themselves. The Athenian people did not know itself. At least, we may say, the Athenian people did not know itself until after the Peloponnesian War. Medieval England did not know itself. And modern America, perhaps, does not know itself. One might even argue that the group as such never knows itself. At most, the group knows itself, so to speak, in the person of just a few individuals who are more than just members of their particular group. Individuals like, in the case of ancient Greek, Thucydides. But it is not only the group, not only the ethnic collectivity that does not know itself. A spiritual community does not know itself. A spiritual movement does not know itself. The FWPO does not know itself. That is to say, doesn't know itself until later on in its history, not at the beginning. Today, we celebrate the 23rd anniversary of the FWBO. Today, the FWBO is 23 years old. We attained our collective majority 2 years ago. We could then say that we were collectively, even if not individually always, collectively at least, grown up. So we should, as a movement, be a little bit mature, a little bit experienced. We should be beginning, as a movement, to know ourselves. We should be beginning to see ourselves. So, beginning to see ourselves as we do, what do we see? That is, how do we see the FWBO? How do we see the spiritual movement to which we belong and of which we are a part? Speaking personally, I see the FWBO in a number of different ways. It's not that I see it in the same one single way all the time. I see it in quite a number of different ways. I see it, to speak, in images. I see it as a tree. Or perhaps I should say, I see it as a sapling. A sapling that has sprung from a seed planted 23 years ago. A sapling that is already bearing fruit, that is already providing shelter and nourishment for thousands of people in many different parts of the world. I see the FWBO also as a lotus bed, a bed of lotuses. That image, I think, will be very familiar to quite a number of you. I see it also as a garden, another familiar image. I see it as a road. I see it as a raft. I see it as all these things. But I also see it as a temple. I see it as a really magnificent temple. A temple that began 23 years ago as just a very tiny, improvised shrine. I see it as a temple that is still very much in process of construction. In fact, here and there we can see great building blocks that have not yet been incorporated into the overall structure. Some people, of course, looking at the FWBO from a great distance, don't see it as a temple at all. They may see it as, let's say, a fortress. Or they may see it as a factory. Or they may see it as a barracks. Some of them, indeed, though they seem to be looking in the right direction, don't see anything at all. But it's not easy to see the FWBO as a temple. It's not easy to see the FWBO as it really is, even when one is quite close up to it. In fact, it's not easy to see it. It's not even easy to know it, even when one is standing right inside it. But standing right inside it, right inside this temple that is the FWBO, what in fact does one see? What sort of things does one see? Well, one could say that one sees space. One sees light. One sees a multitude of great golden figures. One sees enormous vistas. One sees a dome even, overarching above, a dome like that of the sky itself. One sees multiple arches. And above all, perhaps, one sees around the central shrine of the temple, 5 mighty pillars. 5 pillars that support the entire edifice. One sees the 5 pillars of the FWBO. And it's about these 5 pillars, not pillows, pillars. Don't mistake me. These 5 pillars that I want to speak this afternoon. But first, a word or two of warning. Please don't take my 5 pillars too literally. I'm afraid I have sometimes to complain that people do take my words, my images even, rather more literally than they were intended. So please don't take my 5 pillars too literally. Don't think that there are only 5, no more and no less. Don't go and tell someone, well, Bunty says there's 5 pillars and there's just 5. One doesn't have to take it quite so literally as that. Huh? There may be other pillars that I haven't mentioned. There may even be other pillars that I haven't seen. After all, even Bunty doesn't see everything. So, moreover, don't think of the pillars as being necessarily pillars of stone. Don't think of them as being something hard, something fixed, something rigid. The Bible, for instance, speaks of pillars of cloud and pillars of fire. And we can also have pillars of light, pillars of radiance. We can have pillars of living light, pillars of living radiance. So let's think of our five pillars also in these sort of terms.